Welcome to the Casey Kowar Show, a celebration of words. Our guest today is Carrie Madden, and this will be the first time we'll be talking to a young adult author, although Ms. Madden started her career as a novelist. So first of all, Carrie, thanks so much for joining us today.
Well, thank you for having me.
Carrie, why don't you tell us a little bit about how you got started. When I first met you at the Suwannee Writers Conference, you had written a novel called Offsides, and it was published to good reviews. And at that point in time, did you see yourself as always being a novelist?
I really did. I thought that my novel Offsides was fairly autobiographical. I grew up in the world of college football, and at the time that I met you at Suwannee, I was working on a sequel to that, and which didn't sell, almost did, and so I just figured that I would be writing, adult or literary fiction at that time.
Now, what happened to start your transition into writing young adult? And the book we'll be talking about today is Gentle's Holler, published by Viking, and it's a wonderful book. I hadn't read a young adult book in a long time, and I read it and I enjoyed it tremendously.
Thank you. Well, Casey, to be honest, I was, after Offsides went out of print in about 2 years, and then I had hopped the pond, the sequel was rejected, came close with William Morrow, and then the marketing people said no, because Offsides hadn't sold enough, and then I wrote just what I call my coma novel that'll never see the light of day, and then I fell into doing a series of tedious journalism pieces like How to Stay Healthy If You Sell Insurance and What's Hot and What's Not for 2001. And I thought, if I don't write something that I care about and something that's important to me, then I can't really call myself a writer. So I've always loved the Smokies. I spent high school and college in East Tennessee, and I married a man who grew up one of 13 children. And that, I grew up drawing pictures of big families, and so I was just fascinated, how his mother, my husband's mother, could have had babies in the 40s, 50s, 60s, and 70s. So I just tried to imagine this big family, and I just wanted to write, something that I cared about. And I have kids that are the ages of the kids in the story, and, our life is chaotic with raising three children, or chaotic enough, so I was thinking, gosh, how did she do 13? And so I just began to write the voice of this 12-year-old songwriter who sort of is the eyes and ears and spies on her family and wants to have adventures. And it just felt so right to write about something that I loved and cared about rather than worrying about trying to sell or write these awful journalism pieces that were killing me.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, that's mm-hmm. it.
Lily Two Weems is a wonderful character, and she's... how hard was it for you to write from the point of view of the 12-year-old girl to have her see all of the things that her family goes through? Because one of the things I liked about the book is the Weems family really does deal with a lot of adversity in their life.
Right. Well, her voice was, as a writer, I always start with voice. And if anything, plot is what I'm weakest, is where I'm weakest. So it took a while to figure out the action. Her voice, though, came really naturally, and one of the early drafts, a friend said, it's page 18, it's a great voice, but I think maybe something should happen by now, so, mm-hmm. but I just tried to imagine what it was like to, I just remember, as a kid, I was a tomboy, I loved to climb trees, I loved the library lady, so I imagined that, and then I tried to imagine my sister-in-law, who inspired the character, because she really was a musician, she is a musician, and so I just imagined what she would write songs about, and I thought, well, Mama's biscuits, Grandma's glass eye, Daddy's roasted peanuts, and just everyday life.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then I had an obsession, probably an unhealthy obsession with Helen Keller when I was a kid, and so that's how Gentle came to be blind, and I wanted to have Livy worried about that and figure out how to help her sister. So, I'm just listening to the characters and listening to music of the 50s and 40s and 60s, mountain music and country music, and it just helped me. And then talking to my husband, who grew up in Middle Tennessee, but he'll say things like "Pour in the Rain" him. So I could ask him, like, what did he plant? What did you plant in your garden? And what? Tell me about the constellations. And because he, you know, he grew up a country boy, so I could make sure, you know, make sure I was getting it right.
Yeah, and Gentle is a very, very nice character, and this, the hauler is named after her. And did you have any concern when you first put her in the book, or when you were working with the editors, in terms of with the father ends up getting injured too? Is how much the children can? I know children are very resilient, but to have one of the children be born blind, was that a concern of yours, or it is reality? So is that just the way you handled it?
Yeah, I think, it was. I mean, I'll tell you, I'll be honest, there was a, I wrote a draft, one of the early drafts was really, as my son wrote, lame, cheesy, in the margin. And because everything worked out just so perfectly that it was, you really couldn't stomach reading it because it was so, I was afraid to go to the dark places. And I'm, even though, I mean, Gentle was blind in that draft, but everything else was just so, there was really no conflict. And so I just, you know, I was driving in the car with my son, and he said, and I'd had like the 10th rejection because I'd sent it out too fast, as I always, you know, as I tend to do. And I said, it's been rejected again. And he said, that's because you haven't done anything with the dad. I said, I don't have to do anything with the dad. He said, Mom, the dad just shows up. He's just this nice guy, but nothing happens. You got to have something happen. I said, I don't. I said, you're not sweating blood writing this book. And he said, fine, leave it just the way it is. And it was, I thought, oh, I can't. I've got to go back, and I've really got to go to the places that even if it scares me, you know, I have to write the book that's meant to be written, not just the book that is safe and not scary, because, you know, it does go to dark places, but this family loves each other, and that's what I was really trying to show, that there's a, in spite of the difficult things that happen, there's a lot of love and care. And I think, does that answer the question?
Yeah, and did you do some research into the availability of what was available in Braille and that type thing at that point?
I went to the Braille Institute, and it was great. I live about 5 minutes from the Braille Institute in Los Angeles, and they showed me, they took me on a tour of the Braille Library and gave me Braille books from 1961, the books that the lending library lady would have had to find for Gentle. And they were just, they're huge. They're just huge, and Braille could only be printed on one side of the page then, so so it was really interesting to see, you know, the readers from 1961 where kids would had to start learning Braille. So yes, that was one of the, an editor pointed that out. She says, you know, she was just really good, because I hadn't gone that far with it, and so it was just a really good editor to point it out, you know, to describe the Braille books, and so I just went over to the Institute, and they were great, and I ended up reading the book on tape for them, and I did a workshop for 80 kids this summer, and as part of their summer reading program, and I brought in rocks and bones and peacock feathers and applesauce cake and coconut cake, all the, you know, things from the novel that the kids could explore. I brought in our dog who inspired the character of Uncle Hazard. I brought in the mountain music that my sister-in-law adapted, some of the songs that I was telling you about, Daddy's Roasted Peanuts and A Ring of Seven Sisters and Grandma's Glass Eye. So I played the music. So it was really, I mean, and now I have a relationship with them, and I hope to do more workshops with the kids.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, tell us a little bit about Uncle Hazard, because Uncle Hazard comes on the scene, and he kind of steals the book almost, because...
well, we have two dogs. Uncle Hazard was really born out of... Nora, I have a six-year-old, but when she was two, she would not stay in her car seat to save us. And we live in Los Angeles, and she's, you know, having two older kids, I drive everywhere, and I would just bribe her with Uncle Hazard stories. If you stay in your car seat, I'll tell you another Uncle Hazard story. And so that was just, you know, born out of desperation of, you know, keeping a kid safe in the car. And then when I started writing Gentle's Hauler, I thought, what if I could bring this dog in? And we have a dachshund who is, you know, manipulative and sneaky, and we also have a slobbery hound dog who has eaten applesauce cakes off the table and chickens. And so I love I loved the idea of this dog, so I decided to bring him in, but definitely, you know, and there, my friend Craig Gillespie is a painter, and he actually has painted pictures of Uncle Hazard in his Pinecone Palace and in the Holler, and also, you know, different Uncle Hazard paintings, and when I bring them to my writing workshops for kids, the kids will say, "Hey, did Louise paint those? Are those Louise's paintings?" And Craig has always said, "Tell the kids, yes, tell them Louise painted them." So, Uncle Hazard is, you know, he's going to be a really big part of the next book.
Good. Now, Carrie, tell me a little bit about, I know you've gone and you've taught writing to a lot of children, and you've done a lot of it in the Mountain States, and how did you get started with that, and how much of that have you done, and what have you learned from doing that?
Well, I decided Viking, you know, when General Holler was coming out, Viking could not send me on a book tour, and so I just decided to create my own book tour, and because I did go on a book tour with Offside, the football towns, and with that book tour, I often ended up reading to the clerks, and I thought, I am not going to read to the sales clerks during this tour. And so I contacted, I was in Tennessee about 9 months before the book came out, and I went around to bookstores and talked to the clerks, and I said, I'd like to do a reading, but I'd like to set it up as a writing workshop. And then that would lead to them say, oh, that's great, I know the local librarian, and then here's her email, and so I also contacted the local librarians, and then the local librarians would contact the teachers in the middle schools and elementary schools, and so I set it up really early, and I just said I would love to come and do writing workshops where the book is set and readings, but I really want the kids to, and I was nervous because I thought these are the mountain kids, and I didn't go back to Maggie Valley to you know, spend a year there before I wrote the book. I just had to imagine it, and I was worried. I was nervous about getting it right, and the very first day I did a workshop in Waynesville, this eighth grade boy said to me, he said, "Look, I am not a writer." And I said, "Well, what do you like to do?" And he goes, "Fish." And I said, "Well, tell me about fishing." And he said, "I can write about fish," and I said, "You can write about anything." And then he told me about, you know, he wrote this great story about bragging when he catches fish and how much a can of night crawlers cost. So just listening to their stories, it has informed, you know, me thinking about where to go with the next book, listening, you know, and me reading their stories, you know, out loud, you know, back to them. And then some of them have begun to send me their stories, which I post on my live journal, my blog, and I love that because it's not just me getting out there trying to sell my book, it's me going out there but also saying, "You're a storyteller, tell your story, what's your story?" And yes, you do have a voice, and I've worked with like at-risk kids here in Los Angeles, foster kids and teen moms and juvenile at Juvenile Hall, and so many of those kids have been told, "Who are you to, you know, don't get above yourself, don't think that you can use your big dictionary words around me," and you know, just stay, and their voice is silenced, and they don't see themselves as writers. And so what I try to do in my workshop is tell them, yes, you are a storyteller, yes, you have a voice. You know, I tell the younger classes, I say, "You're a story catcher, catch the stories in the web of your imaginations," you know, and that just gets them excited, and they think about, hey, maybe, and then I have them write from the point of view of their grandmother, their grandfather, or have them interview family members. I have them write about their favorite secret places, because Livy too, in General's Holler, loves the red maple tree, and she loves to hide up there, and that's her place where she can, you know, not be seen and spy on the world. And I said, where's your place? What place matters to you? And I mean, I've had kids write about sitting on a roof eating a bowl of macaroni and cheese, and other kids write about crawling under their grandmother's sink with a flashlight, and, you know, reading a story or writing poems, and just going four-wheeling the perfect baseball pitch. I mean, I try to get them to write about what they love and what matters to them.
Now, Carrie, what is the blog that people could log on to and read some of the things that the kids have written?
It's my website. It's www.carriemadden.com, and then on the main page of that is blog, and they just click on blog.
Okay.
And it's right there.
Now, you also teach fiction writing to adults.
Yes.
And what's the biggest difference, would you say, between working with the children and then when you work with the adults?
Well, I mean, I guess the biggest difference is the children write for just the pure joy. I mean, it's like this discovery of, wow, I could be a writer. And some of the adults, it's, you know, they bring more of the adult stuff, like, do you think I'm good? Do you think I could get an agent? How do you think? And it's, so it's more about, you know, it can be with some adults more about, you know, the panic of like, I got to write now and I've got to sell it now, which is exactly where I've been. So I recognize that worry. Mm-hmm. And I just really try to, you know, in my adult classes, just set the tone of we're all in this together. We're all writing stories. And you can't, there's no timetable to fiction. And you have to just let the story, you know, happen and work and believe. And I set a very positive tone in the writing workshops, because I've been in workshops that, you know, especially with adults, that, you know, that people can be destroyed. And I've had adults come to me and say, I can't read this out loud, because the last workshop they tore it apart, or I've never shown anybody my work. So people are, you know, and kids and adults, it's that vulnerability, you know, and I try to get them just to believe that, yes, they do have a story, and yes, it's going to take time, but just to keep, what is the choice but to keep working at it and to keep trying. But I guess the kids, it's more of an innocence, you know.
Sure.
It's like, hey, I want to tell my story, and yeah, I'll send it to you, but maybe I won't, and it doesn't matter. They're writing just for the pure joy of
sure.
it. Sure. But then I have, like, some senior citizens now who've, in my class, and this woman is writing an amazing novel, and she was told her whole life not to write and to go to beauty school and to be a secretary, and she raised 7 kids, and so now she's writing her novel, and you can just see the joy in her when she reads it.
That's great.
Dolores, and she's just thrilled. So it's there, you know, there's a difference, but there's also, we're all writers, and it's just finding the story and believing in it and working at it. That's what I
sure.
really say, you know. Turn off Law and Order and
yeah.
take that, work at it.
Yeah. Okay, you said something earlier that struck my attention, that you had gotten your 10th rejection, and you said that to your son, and you said something I think which is important, which is you had a tendency to send things out too fast. Is there any way that a writer can deal with that, or is that just the nature of the beast, is you want to get it out there and in front of an agent as quickly as you can? And I guess, what have you learned now that, I believe you told me you've got another 2-book contract on General's Holler.
Yes, I do. I've just learned, you know, because it had been such a, 96 was when Offsides came out, and then I had a book come out in 2002 of an American Girl book about writing smarts, but it had just been so long between novels, and so, you know, I was just anxious. It's like, if I don't publish, then, my God, I just felt so desperate. And so that, hence, I just thought, I can write this fast. And that's all the wrong reasons, because so what I tell my students and what I try to remind myself is just to wait, to sit on it. I mean, you know, write some chapters, and then, I mean, keep writing through, but don't, you know, just really resist the tendency to send it out into the world until it's really ready. And when my son said, you know, leave it just the way it is, that was a wake up call, because I thought, okay, I'm not going to send this out, and I'm not till it's absolutely ready, and I'm not going to show. I didn't even bring it into my writing group. I just decided to take it as slowly as possible. Now I have a draft, a really rocky draft of Louise's Palette. That's the sequel, but I'm not ready to send it to my editor yet, because I know it's not good yet, and I gave it to my friend Ellen, who's a really good editor, and she'll, you know, I can trust her, but that's like the only person I'm showing it to, because it needs, and I'm showing it to my daughter, who's, you know, editing chapter by chapter,
mm-hmm.
she'll ask for another chapter, but I just really think it's important to let the work distill and hold on to it, and then when you feel ready, I mean, don't hold on to it for years, but I mean, just resist the tendency to get it out there, because they're looking for every reason to say no.
Mm-hmm.
And they had every reason to say no, because it wasn't very good the first time I was sending it out. say, let it be the best it can be, and really work at every single chapter, really give it the time, it'll just make all the difference.
So tell us a little bit about where Lily Two Weems is going to be going from here in the next book, and do you plan on continuing your program of going out teaching with the children?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, I've got another writing workshop this Saturday in San Diego at Warwick's Bookstore and the library. And I just got back from South Carolina, where I did a big writing workshop for kids in Powdersville and Greenville. So I think, absolutely. Now, Livy, too, basically, this is interesting. When I was on the Gentle Taller tour, a little girl wrote me and said, I really like Gentle Taller, but I don't like the ending. What happens to Daddy? So for this little girl in Colorado, her name's Megan, I thought, you know what, I'm going to start the sequel exactly where Megan has asked me to start. And so I just began writing the day, Livy, she's back in the tree again, and she's waiting for them to bring Daddy home.
Okay.
And so I don't want to give away Gentle Taller,
right,
but they're bringing Daddy home. He's coming home from the hospital, and so she's so excited, and she expects things to be just the way they were, and this is a story of how things have changed, and she's not ready for that change, and all the struggles she goes through as a kid, wanting life to go back to normal, and it's a different kind of normal. And also, there's a series of fairy tales in this sequel, Uncle Hazard fairy tales that she tells the little kids. He's a wishing hound dog who wreaks havoc on Maggie Valley with his big wishes. And so this has been my daughter's summer of fairies, and so she's really fed this book and these Uncle Hazard stories that are, the fairy tales that are woven into the narrative of Louise's palette. And then the third book will be, and also Louise's palette is also about Louise, who's the painter in the family, and she's also very shy, so Livy Two's work trying to help her not to be so shy and, trying to fight Louise's battles and learning that Louise has to fight her own battles. So it's a lot about Louise. And then the third book is called Jessie's Mountain, and that's going to be some of the mom's story, because many people have asked me, the mom is this, was this really, outgoing high school girl who's in Romeo and Juliet and very worked on the newspaper, and then she moved to the mountains and had 10 kids, and we'd love to know more about the mom story. So it's the mom and the grandmother story, Grandma Horace. So we're gonna see. It's still told from Livy Two's point of view, but I haven't written that one yet, so I'm still discovering what that story will be.
Sure.
But it'll be a lot of some of Mama's diary and so forth. So we'll just see Livy Two growing up. She'll go from age 11 to 13, almost 14.
That's great.
That book.
And I
have Emmett's book. I would love Emmett. Emmett is the big brother who runs off to Ghost Town in the Sky to be a gunslinger. And so I have, I'm hoping that Emmett's book will have a life. I've written that, but Viking wanted more of Livy Two's story first. So, and it's good because they get to stay kids longer. In Emmett's book, it's really young adult. It's much more, he's almost 16, and, it's an older book. So
yeah.
I'm hoping that would be the fourth one.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like Viking's really behind the series, which I'm really excited to hear from you.
They're great. They've just been fantastic. So they're really excited, and and the people in Maggie Valley have been very supportive. I had a reading at the Pancake House and at the local town hall, and it's been very moving, because people have come up and said, my daddy ate parched peanuts, and and my brother was, they just connected with the characters.
Sure.
That was an enormous relief, because I didn't grow up in a mountain holler, and I was really worried of getting it wrong. I've been so fortunate to meet these amazing people from North Carolina who seem to really care about the book.
That's great. Carrie, in conclusion here, most of the authors that I interview are in the adult fiction category. And yet I'm approached a lot by young adult authors and people that would like to write young adult fiction. And where could you steer them a little bit in terms of learning the genre of young adult, and how does that differ from, from the adult fiction market? Because I don't know a lot about that.
Right. Well, first thing I would say is to look up the local chapter of the SCBWI. That's the Society of Children's Book Writers and Illustrators, and that's www.scbwi.org. And that's a great resource. It's how I found an editor for Gentle Taller. An editor from Viking came and spoke at Writer's Day. There were 500 of us there, and she said, "Do not hand me your manuscript. I'm flying back to New York, but if you tell me you were at Writer's Day, I will read it." And I sent her Gentle Taller, and she read it, and she took it. And I had an agent who read and said yes yet, but then when Viking said yes, the agent said yes and worked out a really, good thing. So it's being very proactive, but SCBWI is just wonderful. Read lots of young adult literature. There's also some wonderful listservs, the Child Lit out of Rutgers, and then there's another listserv out of Wisconsin, which is teachers, librarians, young adult writers. And then you just learn the trends. You learn what librarians are reading, what teachers are reading. And there's also a lot of online places I could send you that teens talk about what teens are reading. But I have found that the SCBWI is a wonderful place to start because it just connects you to so many young adult and middle grade and picture book and illustrators. And there's lots of conferences. There's lots of Writer's Day, there's lots of workshops, and it's getting out and meeting people. And also, my editor said, "I'm not looking for the next Harry Potter, I'm not looking for the next, big thing. I don't know what I'm looking for, but I know I'm looking for a good story." So mm-hmm. We're hungry for good stories. So, I just think writing the best story you can, that's how it's the same as in adult literature. You write the best story you possibly can, and then you write the best cover letter you can, and you get it to, and you send it out there. But I think that the SCBWI is a wonderful way to start because they'll give you just the list of who wants what. You get a newsletter. You get who's looking for what. You get legal advice. You can join, and you don't even need to have published a book. Like as with the Office Go, you have to have published. The SCBWI, you can join before you publish and just train yourself as to how to navigate the market.
Oh, that's wonderful. Thanks a lot, Carrie.
Thank you, Casey.
We've been discussing Gentle's Hauler this afternoon, published by Viking, first in a series. I highly recommend it. I hadn't read a young adult novel in years, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. So, Carrie, thank you so much for talking with us today, and I look forward to talking to you when Louisa's Palette comes out.
Thank you so much, Casey.
Okay, take care. Take care of yourself.
Okay, thanks. Bye.